approvals to kill that condor
No,
now.
no,
We
no.
understand the
No.
California condor, it's critically endangered, but one of the last stands for that population, it was very close to Tejon Ranch in that mountain range. So this is a critically important area. And they just sort of said, look, we got our take permit. On that note, Lydia, I just want to thank you
You're
for
welcome.
your beautiful words and your beautiful heart and the work that you do, the beauty that you bring to the world. I just want to thank you for just everything that you do, and thank you for coming on EcoJustice Radio.
Big hugs. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been EcoJustice Radio and our show, Rising from the Ashes, Wildfire Resilience for Los Angeles and Beyond. Thank you to Richard Halsey and Lydia Ponce. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal350, and at Wilder Utopia. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, a project of SoCal 350, executive producer and host myself, Jack Eit, co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, an engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. December's Governance and Policy Committee meeting will be rescheduled for January 21st at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. But not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Life Stamps. This is Joseph here with Mr.
It's Tyson again.
Hey, you. Hey, Tyson again. He changed his last name recently to Tyson again.
No.
That was a joke.
Yeah, that was a dumb joke.
That was a bad joke. Sorry. Anyway, so today we're talking about Antigua, Guatemala, and Tyson will be sharing some insight into this. It's a UNESCO heritage city.
Yes, right? It's a UNESCO heritage city. Mm-hmm. It was the original capital of Guatemala. I know Guatemalans, I'm sure, probably know this, but however, there's just a. The reason that the capital moved is because it's so close to a big volcano. And so, you know, they figured if they moved it just a few miles away and made Guatemala City, that it would be a little bit safer and out of, like, potential damage from the active volcano.
So Antigua used to be the capital.
Yep.
What's the volcano called?
I don't remember. And that's really great that you asked me because I have no idea.
But it's an active volcano.
Yes, it is. You can probably see like tons of YouTube and social media influencers constantly are shooting videos of that and stuff. What's been really fascinating as of late, and I think this has something to do with global warming a little bit, there's been like lightning storms there while the volcano's been erupting. So you've kind of get this like double natural phenomenon of a volcano exploding with lava and lightning sparks at the same time.
So not only it's an active volcano, but it's all like it's erupting pretty frequently.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's pretty unusual, right? Normally, like volcanoes don't. I guess I'm thinking of like the mountains up here, which are technically volcanoes, but they're not like erupting.
Right, but I don't think St. Helens is no longer active. I think St. Helens.
Oh, it's definitely active.
Is it still active?
Yeah. All the St. You know, Mount Hood, Rainier, those are all active.
Still on volcanoes. A volcanic fault line, right? Mm-hmm. So, anyways, to make a long story short, that's why the capital is today Guatemala City, and Antigua is just what it is, and it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, basically because it's so close to the volcano, and so that's like the classic backdrop of, I want to say it's Volcan Arenal, but that might be the volcano in Costa Rica. I can't remember the actual name of the one. It's like right there in Antigua. But I wasn't specifically researching this topic this week to talk about just the volcano in Antigua.
Right.
What's important about Antigua is it's got a heavily concentrated numbers of indigenous people that live in Antigua, mm-hmm. of indigenous people. And so a lot of people go there because of the famous UNESCO World Heritage Sites of, like, you know, the architecture, the Spanish colonialism, the mm-hmm. cobblestone streets, and the nature and everything, you know. And you're not too far from like Lake Antitlan if you're going to go that way, or Tikal to see the Mayan ruins, mm-hmm. or even maybe to the Caribbean coast. So more likely than not, if you're going to Guatemala, you are going to Antigua. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think it's important to talk about eco travel within the city of Antigua or Guatemala as a whole. But since I'm mostly focusing on Antigua today, I'm going to give you eco tips for how to be a more, you know, thoughtful, sustainable traveler while you are there in Antigua. So I can just take you down some good practices, if you will, and good things you might want to take advantage of if you visit Antigua.
Yeah. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, what kind of opportunities travelers have for, you know, to be more eco-friendly when they travel? And then also, are there eco-tourism activities?
There's a lot of ecotourism activities within you know, Antigua, or day trips without of Antigua. There's a lot of mm-hmm. volunteerism that can be done in the Antigua area and stuff.
I guess first, before we dive into that, let's like rewind a little bit and just talk about like what exactly is ecotourism. Like, if we're gonna say like, oh, ecotourism, you know, what are we talking about?
At best as possible, because we're all human beings here, is mm-hmm. just to eliminate your carbon footprint as best as possible while you travel. Now, that can be everything from trying to reduce the amount of petrochemicals that are being used to enjoy your stay, to supporting the local economy and not buying mass-produced you know, souvenirs and stuff that may be manufactured in another country. Mm-hmm. Other examples could be like sustainable food, supporting the local farmers and stuff, and not you know, going to like bougie five-star restaurants that are getting all their food flown in for celebrity chefs, you mm-hmm. know, that are just there, you know, but not like buying local produce or local ingredients from the local communities. All the arts and stuff is very samely tied in with that. You want to support the local artists, the local musicians, in terms of things that you buy as a tourist. So a lot mm-hmm. of it, I guess you would say, has to do with your modes of transportation. I would definitely put is probably the number one thing that people like to look at when you're talking about ecotourism. Mm-hmm. The way you consume, the things you buy, when it definitely falls into the realms of ecotourism. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, how you get there, you know, obviously if we could all just potentially get there by an electric powered vehicle to the destinations we would want to, that's obviously better for the whole planet right. as a whole. But you get what I'm saying. So there's a lot of activities mm-hmm. that are either good or bad for the planet or the local people, depending on what mm-hmm. they are.
So, right. And even it's, you know, like, you know, if you can't avoid flying, which a lot of people, you know, they will need to fly into Guatemala, but it's also about like the localized, you know, carbon footprint that you're having while you're there and how to reduce that. And
and the cultural preservation, to be mm-hmm. honest.
The cultural preservation, right.
You know, so, I mean, and this kind of goes without saying, but, you know, like, our listeners are not unaware to this, but, you know, it's always a good reminder, you know, it's like, okay, so I can't speak a word of Norwegian, for example. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to Norway for 3 days, I might not teach myself any Norwegian. I know they're fairly good at speaking English or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you really think about that, you know, like 50 years from now, you know, if nobody comes to Norway and nobody speaks Norwegian no more, how strong is the emphasis for them to preserve Norwegian as a language, mm-hmm. and will that culture become lost? So it's always good to try to pick up some of the local language just to talk to the local people before you arrive.
For sure.
You know, in any place in the world, you know, and obviously today, focusing on Antigua, you know, Spanish, there's a lot of Spanish immersion schools that you can spend, if you got more time, you know, to learning Spanish and the mm-hmm. local language while you're there.
And then with ecotourism too, it probably also, like, I'm guessing there's accommodations, hotels that could be considered more eco-friendly in that regard, where maybe it's they're more locally owned, or they support local artisans, or they can put together like packages, like tour packages that are more respectful of like local, you know, culture and stuff. Is
sort of somewhat, yeah. I mean, what I found more so are a lot of more things are a little more homestay-ish. Mm-hmm. So it's more about like trying to get connected with an organization on how to stay with a local family or whatever and learn some of their you know, home traditions of how they make food, or, and then you may also in turn be able to spend some time with learning Spanish or mm-hmm. whatever, you know. And so it's not so much as like an eco hotel versus like a commercialized, you know, chain hotel mm-hmm. in Antigua, for example. But there's just the options are there and you can look for them. And, you know, it's better always, I feel like, in a destination like this. I use Norway as an example, which was not a very good example because mm-hmm. I'm comparing first world country to first world country here. Mm-hmm. But I think it's always good practice if you're going to second or third world country to try to stay there a little bit longer if you can, because that's where your eco practices will have a bigger impact mm. in terms of what destroys it from the Western world, mm-hmm. essentially.
I see.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, a lot, like, yeah, for all the examples I already gave, you know, culturally, environmentally.
For sure.
Economically.
For anyone just tuning in right now, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps. And we are talking about Antigua, Guatemala, specifically opportunities for ecotourism. So, yeah. So, Tyson, after, you know, that was a very, you know, great sort of explanation of what ecotourism is. So what are some opportunities in Antigua, or like what are some of the things that you can do that align with that sort of philosophy?
Well, since I emphasize language so much in the beginning, I'm going to mm-hmm. start with language. Mm-hmm. You just may not be where point A for everybody once they arrive in Antigua. You choose it however you want to, you know, if you're not already somewhat versed in Spanish. But if you do want to do Spanish immersion once you arrive there, there's three Spanish language schools within Antigua. And you can Google all these and find these out. The first one is the Antigua Plaza Spanish School. Mm-hmm. And then the other one would be the Don Pedro de Alejandro Spanish School. Mm-hmm. And then the third one would be the Antigüeña Spanish Academy.
So are these like, would you say these are like crash courses in Spanish? Like if it's sort of like intensive learning?
Sure, but it's not the same as like a high school Spanish course, I think, because mm-hmm. a lot of what you're going to learn language is locally specified mm-hmm. in terms of like, so you know how like, you know, American English is different from British English, because mm-hmm. British English speakers have no in their language, they have no association with like indigenous people. Mm-hmm. So they have no reason really to include that in a lot of their English language because they don't associate with indigenous people so much in the UK, you know, mm-hmm. and the way that we do, where we've got all the Native American culture and stuff to learn within our language. So you're learning Spanish in a Spanish immersion language school mm-hmm. in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. You're learning a lot of Spanish that's relative to the culture and the environment that's around you because of all the indigenous people.
Mm, I see.
So that's the difference in that sense. So you're not just getting just overall Spanish 1, Spanish 2, Spanish 3.
Right.
You're going to be going through...
You're
going
to be learning more colloquialisms that are specific to Guatemala.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and local slang and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know. So it's not... It wouldn't be the same as learning Spanish in Madrid, for example.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So it'll set you up. So how long would you recommend someone, you know, like... What kind of travel would this be? Would this be like, okay, I want to stay in Antigua for 3 months and have like a complete like cultural immersion? Is that sort of like, you know, when you would go to this kind of school, or could you go for like a week, pick up some Spanish? Obviously you can't learn that much in a week, but.
Well, you know, I think this goes for every individual. We're mm-hmm. here on worker-powered, volunteer-ran radio that
right.
you're listening to us right now. So every volunteering facet of the world that exists, it depends on how passionate you are behind it and how much time you want to spend into it. So
right.
I can see how there would be people that would only want to do this thing for 3 days, and I can see how there would be people that would want to do this for... you know, 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's really just relative to your point and your purpose within, kind of like when we were interviewing your brother 2 weeks ago, you mm-hmm. know, about when he was in Zambia, you know, there are people that will stay there because mm-hmm. they've decided this is their life's mission, their life's work, or their career to do this.
True, yeah.
So there's no like good recommendation of when it's time to, you know, do this, how much time to do this, you know, it's just going to be depending on yourself or if you get involved with a nonprofit and how long that assignment lasts for.
For sure. So, yeah, so beyond the schools, I know that you have a whole list of things to talk about, right? So what's next?
Well, so I was talking about the indigenous people, first off with the Spanish. And so what I'm going to talk about first off is tourism and photography.
Mm-hmm.
So, the good practice is to always, when you see indigenous people selling stuff on the streets or whatever, and you want to mm-hmm. take their picture of the local culture, ask for permission
mm-hmm.
because not everybody's okay with that kind of cultural appropriation. And so it's always good practice just to ask, you know, can I take a picture with you, or can
right.
I take a picture of you and stuff, you know, because mm-hmm. that's just good practice. So
right.
you're not offending any local people. What's highly recommended within Guatemala, or I mean in Antigua, within Antigua is only really the city center is only about a 7x7 block radius.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that you'd say maybe there's like this 14 corners within the city grid of mm-hmm. the city center streets or whatever. So unless you're handicapped or whatever, it's really recommended to walk, you know, don't...
7x7 blocks?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very small cities, mm-hmm. city center, mm-hmm. you know, Central Plaza.
What's the population of Antigua?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like I looked that up and I want to say it was about 500,000 people.
Okay.
With the city center not being very big, like I just mm-hmm. mentioned, but I think like the whole area of Antigua City mm-hmm. is like about 500,000.
I see.
Yeah.
So like it's not terribly, it's not like small, but it's not massive either.
Right, right. Maybe like Salem, Oregon or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, not considerably big,
mm-hmm.
you know. Like I said, like the capital had moved like quite a long time ago to Guatemala City. And I think Guatemala City now is like maybe 2.5 or 3 million people.
Mm.
It's very, very big.
I see.
So, yeah. So if you're healthy, walk around or ride a bike. Don't blast those carbon emissions. Don't try to use like their version of Uber or anything like this, you know, unless you really have to, you mm-hmm. know, or shuttles or anything like this, unless you're going to like day trip out of there, you know,
mm-hmm.
while exploring the city. It's always good practice to not add to the carbon fumigation.
So it's really easy to walk around because it is small.
Yeah.
Or compact, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it is like some dirt roads and some cobblestone streets and places and stuff like this, you know, so it's a little bit rougher walking, but it's not so much in terms of distance mm-hmm. of what you're really going to see within the city center.
I see.
Another good thing to do, if you are going to ride a bit further out and explore the outskirts of the town, there's one place there that's called Monkey Bike Shop. And that's a good place for, again, your mountain bikes and stuff close to the city. And so you can kind of, you know, venture out around the city, ride, you know, to the base of the volcano and then hike up to the volcano. And
do you
stuff
think
like
they provide maps?
Oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll provide you with maps, different rates, you know, whether you want to do multiple days, hourly rate, day trip advice, and, you know, good places to go out and explore and see outside of Antigua.
I know that you probably wouldn't need a map because, you know, your impeccable sense of direction.
I'm pretty good. I don't get lost too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're like a bat.
Yeah.
You just kind of like kind of click your tongue a little bit. Echolocation.
Sort of, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Between that and, you know, me still trying to master quantum physics.
Right.
You know, because
then you're just walking through walls at that point.
Well, if you can go right back to where you started from, you know, without mm-hmm. having to lose any time, then who cares about getting lost?
You just think it. You're like, transport me back to Antigua. That's the ultimate low carbon way of traveling. No carbon, really.
That is true. But anyways, so you may be asking yourself, well, what else is there to do here other than learn Spanish and then ride a bike or go to like the base of the volcano and, you know, ooh and ah at the marvelous sunsets and potential lava spewing out from the top of the cauldron.
You know, you read my mind because I was asking myself that exact thing.
What you're going to do while you're in Antigua?
Yeah, and then aside from riding my bike and looking at the volcano with the lava spewing out.
So there's a lot.
Almost word for word, actually, what you just said.
Yeah, so if you're hanging out with yourself or other people and you're like, man, I really need a shopping day and I need mm-hmm. to really do a lot of this stuff here in Antigua, there's a lot of good local shops you can find that are not mass-produced goods and then are actually made by local people. Mm-hmm. You can talk around with that. But one of the most common gemstones within this region is jade.
Okay.
So jade is pretty much just like mineral deposits that show up in the river really close outside mm-hmm. of Antigua. I can't remember the name of the river, but it shows up on the riverbeds and stuff. And because it's a valuable stone and because, you know, people find beautiful things crafted and made out of jade, they have mass-produced the industry, which messes with, like, local villages outside of Antigua from the river. They blast dynamite on the river to speed up the process.
Oh, I see.
And not let the natural erosion process of the riverbeds just kind of wash it into.
So they try to speed it up.
They try to speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they destroy it.
Yes.
The ecosystem.
So within Guatemala, there's a jewelry artisan shop called Chibalba. And it's spelled Xibalba, Chibalba.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go there, they offer jewelry making classes and they take you out on an excursion where you go to the riverbeds and you actually get pans and you collect the jade yourself and you pick out your specific perfect size piece of jade that you like. Then you come back to the jewelry shop within Antigua and you shape your stone and polish it and cut it and then carve your own earrings, necklace, talisman, ring on your finger, whatever, however you're going to, you know, then so it's basically a jewelry making class, but you get to go out and collect it and take away from that, you know, explosive river industry that's like blowing up and screwing up the water supply for the villages.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's cool because it's really special. Like when you make this piece of jewelry, it's, you know, then you can say, oh, I made this. This is you know, I went out and collected the jade and shaped it and everything.
The jade doesn't fade.
The jade doesn't fade. And then you can bring it back home and, you know, it's like, oh, I made this. Well, I didn't make the jade, but
the river made the jade.
The river made the jade and I collected it from the river.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then you learn how to actually make jewelry in the process of like, you know, grabbing a stone from nature and shaping it and polishing it and
Fastening
it and all that good stuff. So that's like, good activity in terms of like kind of like a day trip, but also kind of like local shopping mm-hmm. in terms. And I think there are other things in terms of like making clothing there, where you can do some like clothing making workshops and stuff too. And then you can obviously buy what you make and what, stuff like this.
What kind of fabrics or like fibers do they work with?
That's a good question. That one I don't know in terms mm-hmm. of that industry for the textiles, mm-hmm. but I assume we're talking about, you know, obviously probably wool from sheep. Mm-hmm. Potentially cotton. I don't know.
yeah. Right.
that one got me drawing a blank because yeah. I don't shop for clothes much. I'm the kind of traveler that packs light, and I hope to leave even lighter than I packed.
Yeah.
And then if I am buying stuff, I'm hoping for it to be like food items that I can get back home with me, or like little souvenirs. But I usually don't ever buy clothes when I travel myself.
Yeah, and I feel like when you know, with ecotourism, I'm sure there's every single thing that you do, you can go deeper and, you know, like look it up, like, oh, how can I do this in a more eco-friendly way? So I'm, you know, it's hard to cover every single little niche topic because I feel like there's such a broad spectrum
of
things that you can do that are like the more eco-friendly version of the thing.
Right, and here's another one that's pretty good for a day trip. It's called the Hobbit Tanango Village, and it's Hobbit Tanango because it's actually a little mountain village outside of Antigua that looks like a hobbit village that was all built by recycled materials. And they have a local farm up there, and I think so they have a little shop. So when you go to this Hobbit village, all your money gives back to the community that built the Hobbit village.
Why does it look like a Hobbit village?
Because they wanted to.
I know, but why? Like, why does it? Is it because like the homes are built into the hillside?
Yeah, it's on top of like a mountain village mm-hmm. kind of setting, and they just take all these recyclable materials and stuff. You know, I'm not sure exactly what, but mm-hmm. you know, local recyclable materials from the forest and stuff, you know, and things of this nature, and they just constructed it in a way where it looks like Hobbit architecture.
That's cool.
And they've got a local farm up there, and so it's
called Hobbit Tanango. Hobbit Tanango. Okay.
Yeah. And so that's a recommended day trip and stuff, you know. And I think people gain some knowledge on just kind of like the DIY building projects that you can do with recyclable materials and stuff as well.
When you say recycled materials, what kind of materials are these? Or is it like
this could be
wood or something?
Yeah, I really think this could be anything. I think this could be, you know, plastics that you don't want to throw back into recycling, rubber tires that you don't want to throw back into recycling. It could be like metal pieces of old fuselages and cars. Mm-hmm. It could be all kinds of stuff, honestly. I haven't seen it, but I know what other recyclable like earth ships look like in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it's often built by these premises, and they put up solar panels to power the whole structure. And so you can totally live comfortably within something like this, and you just mm-hmm. build it, and you don't spend any money on the materials because it doesn't do any more slashing on the land to acquire these materials if you mm-hmm. just take the recyclable materials from, you know, the local city junkyard or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then are the materials normally like broken down to be like, is it obvious that it's like a piece of an old like vehicle, for example, or is it usually modified in a way so that it, you know, like you can't tell?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not an architect here. Mm-hmm. So obviously if you're like trying to build like a door that's like 10x4, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've only got slabs of sheet metal from cars, you're probably going to figure out a way to stitch that all together so you have a perfect 10x4 door that get into your house.
Right.
you know, so, I mean, yeah, I it's like what you're saying. No, they're not going back through an assembly line to make a custom piece mm-hmm. of material for whatever need they need for a roof or a floor or a door or anything like this. You know, they're just going to probably patch it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sustainable through the elements. You know, it rains a lot in Guatemala, mm-hmm. so obviously they want to rainproof things, and
for sure,
and lots of sun, so I'm sure they're trying to figure out how to make solar panels and stuff of this nature, you know. So yeah, so it seems like a cool place to go and learn a lot about that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I know, like, just learning how, I think more and more in this day and age people are trying to learn things to teach themselves how to live off the grid to some extent, because who knows if you're ever going to need to know those skills.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting. And then another good thing, you can always volunteer with the kids and help with building with schools and, you know, just mm-hmm. even maybe for a week if you want to come in there and just, like, you know, teach kids English or other things that work with schools. So that's, there's an NGO there called Niños de Guatemala, mm-hmm. and that's just to help with Guatemalan city kids, you know, whatever current things they have that they need to offer for the children mm-hmm. within Antigua for, you know, expanding their schools and learning.
I see.
And then one more thing with outside of Guatemala for, like, an eco tip before we go on to, like, excursionary things outside of Guatemala. There's a lot of eco farms that you can go out and volunteer about. But mm-hmm. more closer to the city, there's also Antigua Exotic, which is the wildlife conservation center that you can get involved with to help protect local species and, you know, dwindling populations of any type of migratory species or local habitat within the country of Guatemala.
Speaking of wildlife, like, what kind of wildlife would you see down there?
That's a good question, because the variety is so big in Central America. You know, I know you got jaguar. I know you have a ton of variety of species of birds. I know you have lots of different types of fish, both on the Caribbean and on the Pacific coast mm-hmm. within Guatemala. So, you know, I can't speak directly to you about which ones are endangered. I know there's always, like, in this part of the world, there's always, like, the turtles mm-hmm. and the hatchings and stuff, you know, and then trying to get the turtles to go back into the ocean so they can reproduce and then come back and lay their eggs again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, how many species are of primates and birds and everything else are in Central America? I really can't tell.
There's But quite a variety of different things, I'm sure. So for anyone just tuning in, this is 90.7 FM Portland, and you are listening to, sorry, I forgot to say, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and you're listening to Life Stamps. Today we're talking about Antigua, Guatemala, and which is a UNESCO World Heritage city in Guatemala, and specifically eco traveling tips while you're there. And right now we just talked about wildlife, but we're not specifically talking about wildlife right now. You were just listing in a few different ways, like activities you can do to be more eco-friendly
Within Antigua, because now I'm going to move on to stuff you can do outside of the city in terms of, like, volunteering your time on, like, a Guatemalan eco farm pretty close to the city of Antigua.
Okay, yeah, that sounds super interesting. So Guatemalan eco farm. So tell me more about that.
Okay, so, you know, there's lots of different things that are grown in Guatemala, you know. We say avocado, generally speaking, at least in Mexico, they call the fruit aguacate, but it's still an avocado. Mm-hmm. So there are certain farms that are specific to different produce. So if you have more of an interest to learning different cultivation of different produce, you may seek out a different eco farm specific to those type of things. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk to you about three of the most popular ones I came across on my research outside of Antigua.
Okay.
And the first one would be Caoba Farms. Mm-hmm. This one is a multi-vegetation plot of land farm that where you volunteer for the produce and you learn hydroponic education as part of, like, the eco farm. And on site there's a farm to table restaurant. So essentially you volunteer your time here, and I think they have accommodations as well. You can learn, like, the hydroponic side of that, and if you're familiar with hydroponics, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are, but if you understand it properly, you're not wasting water when you create a farm utilizing systems of hydroponics, because you're going to have water kind of rush down. It's not going to be completely level, but you'll create an irrigation method where the water recycles and constantly re-moisturizes the soil.
It's like a closed system. Nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you'll learn how they create and design those things within this place, and then the different type of produce and stuff. And so you volunteer your time, and I think you still pay for accommodation, but I think you're entitled to, depending on how many hours of time you give with this farm, given it various nights, I think you're allowed to just pretty much pick from the farm and then just kind of give it to the restaurant and tell them kind of what you want them to cook you.
Okay, I see.
From the farm. So it's a farm.
So sort of like food will be included.
Food will be kind of included. And you get to kind of pick some, you get to have sort of first pick out of the garden when you do. Because people come and visit and just go to the restaurant as well, you know, and mm-hmm. they're not volunteers within the farm. Mm-hmm. But this place, you, if you do volunteer, you kind of.
So this is really farm to table. Like you are picking the food and bringing it to them and they're cooking it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you get to actually have that whole relationship of farmer to mm-hmm. restaurateur, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of what will go on at Cahoba.
What kind of produce do they?
Everything that you can imagine that pretty much grows well in a hydroponic system.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So obviously things that, you know, probably need more shade and not as much water, mm-hmm. but they do fine just in shady climates. Mm-hmm. They probably aren't utilizing, like mushrooms, for example, I don't think would be in a hydroponic system.
Right.
Because they just kind of spore and they just need shade.
Right.
You know, so water.
Well, yeah, because in a hydroponic system, it's like they're being sort of submerged in water. Like the plants are, like the roots are growing in the water.
Right.
Not really in a soil. They might be in a soil substrate, but it's like being flooded with water.
Exactly.
And drained and cycled through again.
So I'd envision a lot of vine type of, mm-hmm. you know, vegetables and stuff, like string beans and, mm-hmm. you know, snap peas and, you know, various things like that, you know, stuff that just thrive really well without having to have like a really deep root structure
mm-hmm.
and stuff, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So, yeah, and then you were going to mention some other farms.
Yeah, then the second one is called Cacao Junjajpu. I think that's how you pronounce it. This is indigenous. It's not Spanish. Cacao Junaipu or Junjajpu. Spelled with J's. Anyways,
no worries.
As you can imagine, this is a cacao farm, you know, uh-huh. for chocolate. And then here they'll give you workshops on how to grow the cacao, and traditional Mayan chocolate making happens in here. It's mostly a chocolate farm, you know, and then maybe other things of coffee and stuff that are like, you know, cherry-esque, you know, mm-hmm. pod type of things that are growing here and stuff, you know. So I imagine
that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I had a feeling this would apply to the Joe in the studio, because Joe likes his Joe and he probably also likes his cacao. So
yeah, I mean, chocolate and coffee, sign me up.
Yeah, you know,
I'm just gonna disappear for a few years now, so you know.
Did you know
where to find me?
Did you know milk chocolate is a European invention and not an indigenous invention?
I didn't know that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, because
the milk is such a big, like, European, you know, milk product.
Yeah.
I feel like that comes a lot from Europe.
Right. So, yeah, traditional Mayan chocolate is a lot more crumbly
mm-hmm.
and not like that silky smooth chocolate as we know it. It's just the cacao ground, you know, and then sugar, and then there's variations depending on the kind of chocolate pod that you're getting it from, you know, mm-hmm. depending on strength or whatever and stuff like this, kind of.
Mm.
I'm giving you like the real quick cacao 101 that I got in Oaxaca, Mexico, by the way. but yeah, essentially, because there is a white cacao also, there is white chocolate that's natural.
Mm. Oh, really?
And that's that type of cacao.
It's not just this artificially flavored, you know, like,
yeah, it's not
chocolate-ish.
Yeah, it's not just milk and butter and sugar, yeah. which is actually like, you know, white chocolate that you see at the grocery stores.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as white chocolate.
Okay.
And there is a white cacao pod, not just the brown one or whatever, you mm-hmm. know. And they're both interesting, but these Mayan chocolates are nothing that you're used to in terms of European chocolate, because they don't add the milk. They're all vegan,
mm-hmm.
and none of them have dairy
mm-hmm.
or butter or eggs or anything in mm-hmm. terms of like the recipe. They're just kind of like chocolate, roasted cacao, and sugar. And I don't even know if they use anything for a binder.
Mm.
So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
It's super interesting. How do they eat it? Typically, is it like, do they put it in a drink, or do they just eat it on its own?
Both. Yeah, you can just, they make bars and you can just eat little pieces of it, you know, and then.
Oh, so they still make a bar?
Yeah, they still make bars and stuff, but the bars, when you break off squares or don't hold it intact as much, it's a lot more crumbly, is what I'm saying.
I see.
It's kind of like a graham cracker.
Yeah.
In texture, as opposed to an actual chocolate bar, like we know it.
Does it melt? Like you'd expect chocolate to melt?
No, it doesn't melt as well, because that's why when you make Mexican hot chocolate, it is kind of like that chocolate bar and then the milk in together in the pot as you heat it up, and then you add some cinnamon or whatever, maybe a little bit of chili.
I see.
You know, and then it melts down because you need the milk as that binder to kind of break it down and stuff. And usually they shave it down as fine as they can, you know, like a coffee grinder would work great for, you know, a cacao chocolate bar, and get it real fine so you can cook it faster.
I see. Cool. Wow. All right. The farm is called Cacao
Junjajubu.
Junjajubu?
Hunaipu. You spell it J-U-N-A-J-P-U.
J-U-N-A-J-P-U.
Yeah.
I see.
Hunaipu or Junajpu.
I see. Okay, cool. Yeah, what's next? I'm excited.
And then the final eco farm, you know, for volunteering outside of Antigua would be called Eco Farms GT.
Mm.
And this is really cool for more of like farming architecture as a whole. Here they teach you the crop circle, Mayan traditional geometric farms, you know, in terms of relation of building your farm to the nature around you. You know, you see these crop circles and stuff around the world. So you learn how to actually do like basically crop circle construction here, focusing on traditional Mayan growing techniques and, you know, and stuff. It all had a relation to itself in terms of like a Mayan farmer's almanac is always like, you don't have a farm without beans, corn, tomatoes and rice or something like this. They always had their like their main principles, and every farm had these because they would all play off of each other in the soil. All the seedlings would just have their relation to each other.
So
this is kind of the geometric aspect of crop circles and Mayan traditional crop farming. And of course they'll teach you workshops and how that's all important. And they also, you can grow mushrooms and cultivating here as well. So there's kind of a good variety at Eco Farms GT. This is kind of more of like the farm to go to get more of a relationship with the landscape. I would say, because you are learning like, you know, just a variety of crops. And, you know, dabbling a bit more into like the realm of like Guatemalan mushrooms and other things of this nature as well.
Guatemalan mushrooms?
Yeah. Probably psychedelic ones as well.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Because I know like, you know, magic mushrooms, I think, do play a part in the indigenous culture.
So of all the farms that you mentioned, this one seems to be like the more traditional one.
I think so.
Like going back like to the like more Mayan traditional.
If you're talking about Mesoamerica time in history and stuff, you know, obviously before European colonization and how like traditional farms would have been done, you know, before European influence. Yes, I think so.
I see.
And I think the most modern would be that aquaponic one that I mentioned in the beginning for the caoba.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I think I have a... We're at 40 minutes right now. Do you think that's time for the question, the most important question of the day?
It probably is, because, you know, when you work hard and you're sweating on the farm, you're going to want to cool off, aren't you?
I know. Where could we cool off?
Everything you've been talking about is great. But all I really, really want to know is, does it have a beach?
Okay, Tyson, well, it's time to ask the question that you just asked yourself. Does Guatemala have a beach?
If I keep asking myself questions, I'm either not going to know the answer or I'm going to be making fun of myself.
Well,
Do you ever think about that?
No. It was a pre-recorded thing, so.
That's why you don't ask yourself dumb questions.
Well, do you think it's a dumb question?
Antigua's landlocked.
I did say Guatemala, so that was my bad. I meant Antigua.
But you are right, because Guatemala does have beaches. And actually, if I was going to say you were in Antigua, you're probably going to go to the Pacific side, not the Caribbean side.
Oh, really? So how far is it from the Pacific side?
There are two really good beaches that you can go to on the Pacific side. And I don't remember how long it takes to get there. But I know you're not wasting a whole day. I think one beach that I'm going to mention, the closer one, I think is 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. roughly sort of south of Antigua, mm-hmm. hitting the Pacific coast. And then the other one's like a little bit further, maybe even further south. East on the Pacific coast on your way to what's the next country after Guatemala? Honduras?
Maybe Honduras, yeah.
Or Nicaragua. I think it's Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. Before you get to closer to the Nicaraguan border is the other beach I'm going to mention too, which might be about 3.5 hours from Antigua. Mm. So I would recommend, honestly, doing an overnight at either one of these two villages that I'm going to mention to you mm-hmm. for going to the beach.
Okay.
As we had talked about earlier in the show, you know, Antigua's got a volcano. It's a volcanic region. Mm-hmm. So what's unique about both these places is they're black sand beaches.
Interesting.
So they've got the volcanic sand mm-hmm. and stuff. And so that's pretty interesting from the volcanic deposits and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of like kind of like Q&A that goes along with black sand beaches.
Mm-hmm.
What
do you mean Q&A?
So black sand gets hotter than white sand.
Yeah.
So
I was wondering that in my mind. I was like, should I ask that question? Does it get hotter?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, in some cases it can reflect stronger onto your skin too for the UV levels. So kind of like, don't forget your sunscreen and don't forget your flip flops because
it's going to be hot.
It's going to be hot. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So that there's that aspect of it. Recommended to go earlier in the morning. It is Guatemala, even if it's like, you know, January or February, you mm-hmm. know, the middle of the day could be kind of pretty hot and unpleasant
right.
to be in either one of these places. However, you know, you're fine if you're just going to be kind of swimming the whole time mm-hmm. with your water shoes or whatever and stuff, you know. But obviously, it's best in the morning before it like really starts.
So the Pacific side, so you're going to be on the west side of the country.
Well, so, you know, Central America kind of spins around. Like
right
as an isthmus,
right? Because in my mind, I want it to be north south, but it's not quite. Yeah,
it's not really. It's
so it'd be like the south coast.
It's kind of like the south coast because mm-hmm. of where you know Antigua and Guatemala City are. Sort of like because if you were in Antigua and you're going directly east, you're going to get that Lake Antitlan. Mm-hmm. And in Lago Antitlan is, you know, just that huge lake within Guatemala with all the villages around the lake and mm-hmm. stuff. But if you go, I think, from Antigua directly west, mm-hmm. I think you're going to cross it over into Honduras because the land just kind of stretches down, you know what I mean? So you technically have to kind of go like south of Antigua to get to the coast, the Pacific coast.
I see. Makes sense.
If you were going east, you would go straight to the Caribbean coast, but that's much further away.
Yeah, it is kind of a south. Actually, it's Mexico that's directly west of Guatemala.
Oh, that's
Honduras
right.
Honduras is east. And then there's El Salvador, which is like southeast.
Yeah, that's correct. I remember now because I went to the Guatemalan border when I was in Mexico one time from Chiapas State.
I see.
Anyway, so the geography, you know, just kind of spins on an isthmus there mm-hmm. before you eventually cross over from Panama into Colombia.
I see.
But just the same, we got two beaches to talk about. Mm-hmm. One is La Playa Monterico.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more of like the kind of built up locals beach. And when I mean built up, I mean that the locals still love it and stuff. And the restaurants and the hotels that are there mm-hmm. are like kind of local approved. They're not like, you know, foreign chains that are like making this some bougie new holiday resort spot. It's just Guatemalan businesses catering to Guatemalan people.
I see.
And stuff. So it's like a build up locals beach.
Yeah.
And so the prices are still good because it's a local speech. And you definitely need Spanish because it's a local speech. There's mm-hmm. not a whole lot of English speakers in a lot of like the industries of the restaurants and mm-hmm. the hotels when you go to this beach. This one is more of a nature's beach than a swimming beach because the tides are really extremely erratic here and kind of unpredictable.
I see. Okay.
And stuff, you know, just volatile like the volcanoes is the ocean.
So don't go in the water?
Well, you can wade around in the water, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't go like, you know, past like 10 feet out in that water where you're above your neck, you know, because like it's not safe.
I see.
The waves are just too like volatile.
Yeah. Are rip tides a thing or like a sneaker waves?
Sneaker waves for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like a predictable swell because mm-hmm. it's not recommended as a surfer's beach either because it doesn't really follow like a normal swell pattern either.
I see.
I think it's more connected to the actual volcanic fault lines mm-hmm. of like, you know, the main volcano outside of Antigua and some of the others around the area.
I see.
So that's pretty much what goes on with La Playa Monterico. Yeah.
Got it.
And then...
And that's the closer beach, right?
That's the closer one. Mm-hmm. And then, but El Paradon would be more of like your place to like, you know, kick off a holiday or something, you know, if you'd been volunteering in Guatemala for a month or whatever, and you want to hang out with some expats mm-hmm. and hang out with surfers and stuff, you'll go to El Paradon. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think that one's about 3 hours southeast of Antigua. And there's a laid back surfers expat community there and stuff. You know, the swell's a little more predictable there.
Okay.
A good recommendation hostel to stay there is just the Driftwood Surfer Hostel.
Okay.
So there you'll just, you know, hang out, surf bum it up for your last couple of days in Guatemala until you kind of leave and do whatever you do after doing your volunteering eco experience within Antigua or other parts of the country.
Cool. Right on.
One more thing I wanted to mention about both these beaches.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're there during from September to November, clams are in season. They have like these...
Ooh, what kind of clams?
I don't know. I guess South Pacific razor clams. We mm-hmm. have like North Pacific razor clams here mm-hmm. in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So that would be my best guess. They show up in the mangroves of Guatemala. Guatemala's also got like these mangrove trips and stuff you can do with like boats and earlier in the morning for excursions mm-hmm. and you can see all the birds and the wildlife migrating through the mangroves. And
nice.
People collect clams and stuff there from September to November mm-hmm. and during that time is also kind of I think is when the turtle hatching will happen on some of these Guatemalan beaches.
Oh, okay.
On the Pacific side as
well. So you can get some nice clams and go watch can you watch the turtles hatch or something
you can always you can always watch them hatch now mm-hmm. if you're allowed to actually help them back into the ocean without actually doing any kind of eco training mm-hmm. habitat wise I don't know if that's like permitted by the local government mm-hmm. but you know like I had mentioned earlier in the show there is Antigua Exotic is the wildlife conservation center within Antigua to learn all about, you know, animal conservation and stuff for eco travel within Guatemala as well.
I see.
So, you know, that's you do that program, I'm sure you can help all the baby turtles into the ocean as well.
Well, cool, Tyson. That's a very like comprehensive. I mean, I feel like we've learned a lot today, or I've learned a lot today. You've shared a lot of research today about, you know, eco traveling in Antigua. From, you know, like there's a schools like to learn Spanish and then the things to do in Antigua.
Natural jade farming too, you know.
Natural jade farming.
You can actually pan for the jade as opposed to blowing up the
right, which is super super interesting. The farms, the cacao farm was really interesting, and then also the traditional Mayan farm to go visit and potentially stay and volunteer at. And yeah, and then like, you know, the beaches afterwards. But there's one thing that I was curious about this whole time, because you kind of mentioned food a little bit. What kind of food are we going to be eating in Guatemala, and especially in Antigua?
I don't think Antigua was known for any type of food that differentiates itself from, like, you know, Guatemalan cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
The only part of the region, the whole country, I think maybe in the Criollo section of the Caribbean side, mm-hmm. where they have a bit more of, like, you know, African descendant population that does a little more of, like, that kind of Caribbean cuisine on the Atlantic coast. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, generally speaking, the Guatemalan cuisine is kind of like your beans and rice and plantains, mm-hmm. and, you know, like a protein type of thing or whatever, right. and stuff. I believe there's what's the national dish? Oh man, I can't remember. It's like a Guatemalan tortilla kind of thing. It's not spicy like Mexican food. It's mm-hmm. just going to be kind of like a stewed beef with tomatoes and cabbage on a piece of, like, tortilla-esque bread, I believe.
I did just look it up, and it says Guatemala has multiple national dishes.
Oh, really?
One is called pepillon, which is a thick, rich stew that's part curry, part stew.
Right, and it's not too spicy, this one.
Yeah, made with meat, vegetables, roasted spices, seeds, and chiles, and often served with, what you said, rice or corn tortillas.
Yeah. Do you see a listing for the Guatemalan tamale?
Guatemalan tamale, not in this list.
Guatemalan tortilla.
But there's a chile...
Guatemalan relleno.
Yeah.
That's the one. Could you read that off?
The description for this one is really short. It's also considered one of Guatemala's national dishes.
Okay. Well, anyway, so that...
This dish originated in Puebla, actually, in Puebla, Mexico.
Oh.
But it's also considered to be one of Guatemala's national dishes.
Yeah, but they don't use, like, a spicy chili with this one. This is almost what we know as kind of like a Chicago-stuffed bell pepper in a way.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I don't think they stuff it with rice. I think they stuff it with, like, yucca or some other kind of starchy vegetable and, like, a ground beef and a tomato sauce and stuff.
I see.
So I found this to be kind of interesting as well, you know. But Guatemalan food, generally speaking, is pretty mild.
Cool.
And, yeah, it is. So.
Well, we have to wrap it up, and I know that there's one other thing that you wanted to talk about today, Tyson.
Yeah, so to our Spotify listeners, this is the end of season 4. Thank you for listening with us this season. In 2 weeks, expect a trailer to drop for everything that's going to be coming up in season 5.
And this is Spotify exclusive, so the trailer is not going to come out on the radio.
No, because the radios, we're just doing our radio thing. Mm-hmm. Every other Thursday at 10 in the morning at KBOO 90.7 FM, you'll always find Life Stamps. And yeah, we got like a little new feature, but our show is pretty much staying the same for you guys. But we like to put out trailers for our regular Spotify listeners, so expect to hear that. And thanks for you know, listening in on Spotify for season 4. And yeah, season 5.
And you can find us Spotify. The account is just called Life Stamps.
Yeah, Life Stamps. You should see Life Stamps stories from here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, our Spotify account. Should show up on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and some of the others. But
cool.
Still working on getting in that multi-placed, if you will, in the different streaming places in the world.
Alrighty. Well, yeah, we're super excited to start a new season with some new things coming your way. So stay tuned, and yeah, we're signing off. This is Joseph.
And this has been Tyson.
And this is Life Stamp. Stories from here and there.
Stories from here and there. Bye bye. Listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time,
happy traveling!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about